Welcome to the South Baltimore Now podcast. This is Kevin Lynch here. We have a fun episode here for you today. There's an election coming up here on May 14th. There are several city positions available. One of them is the council person positions. And here in South Baltimore, we are in District 11. We have the incumbent Eric Costello, but he has a challenger this year in Zach Blanchard. So we are going to have Zach on today. And if you're familiar with SouthBeaver.com, we're not a overly political website. We do touch on some political issues sometimes, but we certainly like to cover more the real estate and businesses and fun happenings in South Baltimore. So with an election coming up, we did want to bring both candidates on and just have a conversation, just get to know them, talk about South Baltimore. This is not going to be a hard-hitting political interview, but these are two guys that are in the community and a lot of you know them pretty well. So hopefully through this interview, if you don't know Zach, you'll get to know him, see where he stands. We're going to have Councilman Costello on in a later episode so you can get to know both of them. So hopefully this will give you guys some information going into the election and get to meet two South Baltimoreans. We have Zach Blanchard on with us today. Zach, thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for deciding to do this, Kevin. I'm really excited to participate.
Yeah, not a problem. So Zach, where are you from and how did you end up in South Baltimore?
Yeah, good question. So from Louisiana originally, I went to the Naval Academy for college, met my wife who is originally from Montgomery County when I was here. She moved to Baltimore in 2016. I was off doing my Marine stuff for the next 5 years or so. So we were long distance for about 5 years and I was like, hey, to the Marine Corps, you can make me like the head basketball counter at Fort Meade if you could just please put me and my wife in the same state. You know, I was in Virginia, California, North Carolina, England, all at different times. And fortunately, I got a better job than that. I was able to get a job teaching political science at the Naval Academy. So both training and recruiting midshipmen to go Marines, as well as teaching the American government course at the Academy. So that's how I ended up here in early 2020.
And how did you end up in South Baltimore? Obviously, the Naval Academy is in Annapolis, and I'm familiar with the commute between the two. So how did you end up a resident of Federal Hill?
Yeah, no kidding. So I have been, and we'll probably talk on this a little bit later, but I have been very passionate about wherever my family ends up. I want to be very involved in the community. I want my neighborhood to be the type of place where me and my wife know our neighbors can rely on them. They can rely on us. We have a real sense of place. Maybe one day our kids may want to raise their kids in the neighborhood. And so this was a really intentional decision for us. Also, we wanted somewhere that we felt like if we had a dense neighborhood where people are close by, things are walkable, all that type of stuff, we'd be more likely to find a community than we did elsewhere. And we bought our townhome on Pulteney Street right behind Blue Moon 2 for just over $230,000, which was a huge advantage that we have is the affordability of good homes and good neighborhoods in the city. So that was a huge part of the decision as well.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the cool things about South Baltimore, it's pretty centrally located. Most of the suburbs are about 20 to 30 minutes away. So Zach's obviously somebody taking advantage of one of those commutes that isn't too far. Now, you said you live in Federal Hill. What are some of your favorite aspects of living in Federal Hill?
Yeah, I probably, especially now that I'm campaigning, I probably have coffee with someone in the neighborhood on average just under once a day. During the weekdays, I go out to the bars a decent bit. We go to church 3 blocks from our house. I coach football at Digital Harbor, which is about 5 blocks from the house. You know, walking around, being a part of the neighborhood and really having the sense of like, I mean, like when our son was born, we had a meal train for 2 months. It was like a really incredible like outpouring that we had from both our neighbors, our church community, other folks that we happen to know in the neighborhood. So we really feel like we belong here and that means a lot. And we don't plan on moving. It's a bit of a cop out when people say my favorite part about the place is the people, but it really is. I will also say that I have become a huge sucker for the row home architecture that we have a ton of on the peninsula. I'm a great admirer of a good cornice. Always. I'm a big fan of that as well. So outside of the walkability and the people, that's a really big thing as well.
I know you mentioned a little bit, but tell us about your resume a bit. I know you've been an active member of the community and you served your country as well. So tell us about your background a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. So I commissioned out of the Naval Academy as a Marine Corps officer when it was doing Marine Corps officer stuff for a while. Came up to Baltimore when I got stationed in Annapolis to teach American government at the Academy. As far as being involved in the community, when I first moved in, I reached out. I heard about the Block Captain program at Federal Hill, reached out to the Neighborhood Association president before me, Beth Whitmer, was like, hey, could I apply for this position? And she started laughing like, you know, she's like, would you like to restart the program? We haven't really been super active for a couple of years. And because I knew I wanted to be involved, I was like, yeah, sure. And as you you know, you volunteer for one thing in the neighborhood and you're only a couple steps away from eventually becoming the president. And so been involved in a lot of different things neighborhood-wise, a lot of different things. The CAF community of South Baltimore founded the CCSB's Volo softball team, was involved in the restoration of an 8,000 square foot building right next to Holy Cross Church on West Street. So I coordinated the low skill, high morale team of volunteers. So the last couple of years I've coached football at Digital Harbor High School, which has been tremendously rewarding and just a great way to see young people from so many different parts of the city. And then I've also been on the board at Federal Hill Main Street. So getting a sense of the placemaking, the Main Street aspect, the businesses, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about as well. From all different angles, I've been involved.
It sounds like you've seen a whole lot of different aspects of this community. And obviously now you're deciding to run for office, running for the council position in District 11. So how did you make that decision to want to run?
Yeah. So I was never interested in running for office. That's never been something that had crossed my mind. I grew up in a rural area where I didn't know anyone doing that. And then I was in the military for most of my adult life. So you don't really engage in politics much at all. And I got involved in politics because I was involved in the neighborhood. And by virtue of being involved in the neighborhood, I had two, I'll be honest, very negative interactions with my now opponent that were really inspired me to get involved in politics. I had one instance where I wrote an article in the Baltimore Brew, and then my opponent showed up on my block at 9 p.m. to very angrily communicate his thoughts on the article. And with a conversation ending with, I'm still going to fight for my constituents, but I'm not going to forget this. And then a couple months later, we were involved in an effort to, Digital Harbor High School is the largest high school in the state of Maryland that doesn't have its own regulation sports field. So we were involved in that effort. And then my opponent got involved with city schools to get them to move away from the project. At that point, I was looking for someone to support. I had a couple folks in the neighborhood be like, hey, you should think about running. No one was running. No one ran in 2020, for anyone who's not aware. After a couple months of disheartenment, my wife and I were like, yeah, let's do this.
And coming from the Naval Academy and even the course you teach yourself, is the goal of the Naval Academy to have these men and women be future leaders, maybe future office holders? Is that kind of part of the formula at the Naval Academy?
You know what's funny? You would think that from the outside, and I think it would be probably a good thing for our democracy if we had that. The military as a whole is so removed from politics. I didn't vote until I think 2016 was the first election I voted in, because it was just really driven home that idea of there were debates about whether or not officers should be involved in democracy, which is a long running debate that goes back since before World War II in the voting process. Maybe some people were interested. The other thing too is at least a lot of my, I have a lot of close friends from the Naval Academy, and people are really going there for the most part, not for like future steps. I think for the most part, they're going there because they want to serve their country, you know, as platoon commanders or division heads. If there were people who were interested in that, I didn't realize that when I was a midshipman, and I didn't see a lot of that as an instructor.
And obviously, over anybody's lifetime in this country, no one party is held on to power, just ping pongs back and forth. So I'm sure if you're rising up the ranks of the military and you're known as somebody without strong political opinions on one side or the other, it's probably an easier way to transition from one administration to another.
That's an interesting thought, Kevin. I will say, though, that I think makes a lot more sense in most of the civilian kind of high-ranking government positions, but maybe that's the case for generals and admirals who were a high ways above where I was as a Marine captain. Mm-hmm. But I really think that the military officer corps, you are not open with your political stance on things. So the focus is on having a meritocratic promotion system. And I don't think there's a lot of political alignment, or at least very little. And I certainly never noticed that, which I think is really good, right? We don't want the people controlling the armed forces to favor one side or the other politically.
Sure. Now you're entering politics. So what are some local issues you are passionate about?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So I'll hit on a couple of them. So one, you can't run for office in the city without having a very thorough, serious approach to public safety. And I can go in depth with different thoughts on different types of crime that we've struggled with. I've said this before in public. I was robbed at gunpoint back in September. It was 3 p.m. I was right outside my house. And I'm not moving. My family's not moving, but I don't want my block to be me, my family, and a bunch of renters who don't feel good or safe about staying in the neighborhood. And so it's just something that armed robbery in Baltimore is per capita is higher than any other city in the country. We have, you know, homicide rate is not the highest, but is high. We've got several really serious issues like that. So having a very whole community whole government proactive solutions to public safety that aren't taking in political considerations and what you decide to do or not do is, I think, incredibly important. And I'm very committed to that. A big issue that I've been talking about a little more recently, and I'm really excited about, is a parent of three kids, right?
Yes.
We have three elementary or elementary middle schools on the peninsula, especially Prep and FSK, that manage to have a very high percentage of the students are from lower income families, and a very even balance between that and students from families who can afford to send their kids to private school or could afford to move to the county or could afford, you know, both groups are performing above expectations. And I think that's really wonderful. And we don't have that on the high school level yet. I coach football at Digital Harbor High School. It is very few students at the high school who are from the surrounding neighborhoods. And if we want, it's good for schools to have that community, like community involvement that is only ever really going to come from having a bunch of parents involved, right? No one's ever going to have more skin in the game than parents. So what we see with the PTOs at FSK, at TJ, at Prep, like all the wonderful stuff that all of you guys are doing, it's just really hard to build that when the whole student body at Digital comes from all over the city and everywhere but the neighborhood. So it's beneficial to the school to have more support, and the neighborhood associations try to be involved, but it's we just can't compete with a bunch of parents who live nearby and have that skin in the game. The other piece too is if you want your neighborhood to be really good communities, you need the neighborhood to work really well for families from birth through 18. And right now, there's not a lot of families who can afford to send their kids elsewhere who are making the decision to go to Digital. So we have to figure out how to make that work for that reason as well. And just imagine, Kevin, imagine if in 10 years, like, all the kids going to FSK and TJ and Prep, it like 2/3 of them decided to go to Digital Harbor. And you would have, that wouldn't be 50% of the student body, but it would be, you know, a reasonable minority of students. And you would have so much involvement in the school. And there's just so many good things that come out of that. So I'm really passionate about that. Talking about the follow-on question is, that's great, but how are you going to achieve that? A couple things that I focused on. And I've spoken with Tally Kovacs, the PTO president at FSK. She had some great thoughts on this. I've spoken with Principal Jackson at Digital Harbor High School, who I know very well. And I've also spoken with Ash Esposito, one of the two elected school board members in the city. And my three big talking points here. One, Digital Harbor has to be physically safer. There is a program by the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement that has the funding essentially lined up at least and was supposed to start in January of 2023. Digital was supposed to be a pilot school. It is still supposed to be a pilot school. The program just hasn't started yet. The goal is for this to start in the fall. We have to get this to work. I coached a young man on the JV football team who is stabbed outside of school by another student maybe a month or two ago. And it's just not good for anyone. And this is a citywide challenge that we know all about, this challenge at so many of the different high schools in the city. But we have to get that right, and we have to get the support from the city on that front. So that's number one. It's incredibly important. Number two, we need something like a program that is whether it's Ingenuity, which is a STEM-based pipeline program that we currently only have at Poly, or a college prep program or IB or whatever. Like, we need a program that maybe it has an entrance criteria, like a kind of a program within the school that has the entrance criteria, not the school as a whole. Or maybe it's just by virtue of the program, it's better for students who are coming into high school prepared for a college track rigor. And we need something like that. So that way families looking at Poly or City or private schools of the county can say, oh yeah, I mean, there are these options at Digital as well. And we do have those options. It's a big school, but it's not in a pipeline yet. And lastly, and this is a state level change that needed to be made, but Baltimore City is the only county in the state of Maryland that isn't at least half elected. So we only have two elected school board members. The majority of our members are appointed. And I'm a big believer that we need elected school board members to represent our families as opposed to appointed school board members who effectively represent the mayor due to his veto power and whatnot. And so I am a really avid proponent of an elected school board that's basically standard across the country. And I don't know why we shouldn't have that as well in Baltimore.
A lot of information there. I know, just as you said, as a parent of several kids, most of the people I talk to these days are parents. And I guess it was 2 weeks ago was like commitment week for kids to decide where they're going to high school, which I think school choice is obviously a great thing for many people, but it's also probably pretty darn overwhelming at the same time. It's almost like you have to go through the college application process twice. But with that being said, with all these kids committing to high schools, I look around the neighborhood, I see all these new Poly sweatshirts. I see all these new City sweatshirts. I've seen a lot of Mount St. Joe sweatshirts, which is a private Catholic school. You hear of a lot of parents sending their kids to Spalding, which is another Catholic school in the Glen Burnie area. If your kids are really into arts, you'll see some parents whose kids are going to Baltimore School for the Arts. And I really hear almost zero dialogue about Digital Harbor High School. I'm not seeing any new Digital Harbor High School sweatshirts around the neighborhood. So obviously it's a shame because, like you said, you have all these really strong lower schools in the area. And then too, as somebody who's also pretty involved in the rec sports leagues around here, there's some really good soccer players and basketball players and baseball players in the area. So you can imagine the school spirit and community spirit that could be if one day, like we've covered the FSK soccer team winning the city championship, the Thomas Johnson basketball team was just in their region championship, and the FSK middle school basketball team was just in the region championship. If you take that pipeline, not just families that know each other, but maybe you have some good sports teams and maybe you start seeing more light blue around the neighborhood for Digital Harbor. So it's really, most of us probably grew up in that traditional setting where you knew what high school you were going to go to. You probably started going to their high school football games or high school basketball games before you're in high school. So I think that's the missing piece down here is you got the good lower schools, you got the good rec leagues, you got the good extracurricular activities. And certainly that high school aspect is definitely one of those next steps a lot of people are looking for.
Yeah. And to give all the credits where it's due, Digital Boys indoor track team just won the state championship. So it's, you know, there are great things happening at Digital. Band program, which is starting at coach on the football teams. Our improvement between the previous couple of years and this past year was very significant. And I love posting on Facebook, encouraging folks to come out to our home games down at Bannerfield or Latrobe Park. I will say, I think we have an incredible opportunity with the increase in blueprint funding going to the school district, right? Like, we've had a situation in the city where the schools were underfunded for so long that you ended up just having an adequate level of funding pumped into a couple schools, that the cities and Polys and BSAs, maybe Western type of situation. And now that we have all this more money available, right, we just need to make sure that it's being spent effectively to enable exactly the type of stuff you're talking about.
And certainly Digital Harbor has its real estate challenges as well. I was looking on Google Maps. I don't think there's a school in the city that's as smothered by houses on every side that Digital Harbor is. Usually a high school has some space to breathe. Usually it has a baseball field. Usually it has a football stadium. Usually it has parking lots. It's really in the middle of a neighborhood, which even if it's the nicest high school in America, there's some headaches that come with living near a high school. And there's probably some challenges for the teachers and the kids to be in such a tight area, and obviously to not have their own sports facility. And seems like their baseball team's kind of a traveling band because every year they're at a different facility seemingly. And luckily there are some baseball fields that they keep improving. So they kind of have their options, but certainly, you know, you look at a school where it unfortunately it doesn't have its own athletic facilities. It's has a small field, which I know you know a lot about, but certainly it has its real estate challenges as well. But luckily there are some really good parks in the area that continue to get better.
Yeah, no, that's a lot of different things that can support both the students in the athletics and after school programs, as well as just the families in the community, right? The Riverside Park, what's going on there is probably what you're referring to. That's going to be a huge advantage. I was just blown away when I heard that the South Baltimore Little League, someone sent me an email that I guess South Baltimore Little League had 481 kids sign up for this spring season. And just the momentum that we have in a lot of ways is super exciting. We need to be holistic, birth through 18, and how we think through that.
Sure. Yeah. We had the presidents of baseball and softball in the Little League on one of our recent podcasts. And it's really incredible. Yeah. The growth, as you said, at the Little League, but then it's also crazy at the same time. Now you're at an organization of 480 some members, not counting the volunteers, which probably puts you well into the 500. So with an all volunteer board, it's certainly an incredible work people at the Little League are doing to manage that and continue to have that grow. And transitioning over to some different issues, clearly, if you live in South Baltimore, it's really the small businesses and the retail that really define the character of this area. Everybody has their favorite restaurant, their favorite coffee shop to talk politics or not talk politics. And obviously, those businesses want the best business environment to thrive down here. And then hopefully there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there that want to join these small businesses and be a part of South Baltimore as well. So what do you think are some areas you can not only help these business owners, but maybe make it a good environment for more business owners to want to make South Baltimore their home?
So let me speak directly about the area around Cross Street Market, the quote-unquote Federal Hill Main Street area, because that's obviously the densest concentration of businesses on the peninsula. And I'm, as a board member, I live within that, the bounds of that area. I've got a lot of thoughts there. There's a lot of frustration, and I know this having knocked on a whole bunch of doors, and I know this having listened to a whole bunch of business owners. There's a lot of frustration with the environment around Cross Street Market, right? There's a public safety is a driving issue, but also cleanliness is a big issue. Obviously, there was the recent effort to, we had the north side of Cross Street, which was closed to car traffic, which was popular, very popular with residents, not as popular with businesses. We were never able to figure that one out. And then we had, you know, just a variety of issues like this that we just aren't clicking on. So bigger picture, we need a business improvement district for Federal Hill. We need, right now, we have Federal Hill Main Street, which gets, it just jumped up to about $60,000 a year for Main Street, but that's not even paying for the executives, the one paid employee salary and benefits. So you have this kind of self-licking ice cream cone where your job exists and you have to raise money so you can keep having your job. And that's a big bump over where it had been for a while. And so that's a huge challenge. And then we have a business association, which gets the RBDL tax. I think it's like $30,000 a year. But my understanding is that due to some financial and accounting challenges within the organization, they've been able to spend that for a couple of years. And then we have the South Baltimore Gateway Partnership, right, which is a consistent grant funding source. We could easily have we do have $200,000 or so a year going into that area, not even including external grants. And so to not be firing on more cylinders is a huge missed opportunity. And so we need something like a business improvement district where we have people paying into a tax, or maybe we have a tax on drinks where like it's every drink is charged 10 cents, but that stays in the area to be used for cleaning and greening, public safety, maybe some, you know, events and other beautification efforts. I have my own thoughts about how we can use parking meter revenue to support that as well. There's a lot of ideas, but we've been talking about these challenges for several years now. And it's like if you look at Federal Hill Main Street did a survey, there was clearly, you know, a lot of frustration in that regard. The Neighborhood Association, in conjunction with Federal Hill South Neighborhood Association, essentially copied a survey that the Locust Point Community Association, Locust Point did theirs in spring of 23. We did ours in fall of 23. And the differences in how people felt about their neighborhood were, you couldn't overstate it, Kevin. It's in Locust Point, it was like 1.2% of 400 respondents said that the neighborhood had gotten much worse in the last 10 years. And in Federal Hill, it was like 20%. It was just a much larger number. The majority of our residents don't plan on being here in 10 years. Like, I'm the Neighborhood Association president. Like, I don't, and I sit on the board and I'm raising a family here. Like, I'm not trying to be a doom and gloom guy at all. But the situation is pretty frustrating, and I don't think we should put lipstick on a pig about that. So we need a business improvement district or some other very serious, consistent way to supercharge the efforts and not just have it be one person who has to still raise some money for themselves. And we are one exciting thing, Federal Hill Main Street and the Neighborhood Association both submitted money for a Gateway Partnership grant that would allow us to have a public space plan that would, so pulling businesses and residents together to have some professional planning firm come up with great ideas to have better public space in the area around Cross Street Market. Something that we can then say, okay, we all know that we want A, B, C, D, and E. All right, let's get to figuring out how to fund this stuff. And so I think that's a really promising opportunity that we have in the future. If we don't get it with this grant, I'm confident we'll find a way to get it soon.
Sure. And obviously another big aspect down here is it's a continually growing area. There's a lot of cranes. There's a lot of construction. There's everything from new office buildings, new apartment buildings, new townhome developments. Some buildings are just retail. A lot of people have a lot of different opinions on the things that go in and the process to go in. And maybe this is one of the reasons you wanted to run for office. But are there any thoughts or feelings you have about how development and construction is handled in this area?
So first off, like I said earlier, our home was $230,000 when we bought it not that long ago. And the Zestimate is like $290,000 right now. If homes like ours cost what they do now, I don't know if we would be living in Baltimore, but I very much doubt we would have bought a home in Baltimore. So once again, being able to buy good homes at good prices is a good thing. And it's just a supply and demand thing that the more housing you have available, right? The more that can stop home prices from turning into what we see in Washington, D.C., or even in, say, Columbia. So that's that I'm a proponent of. There's certainly a pay-to-play system within permitting processes specifically. And this is not unique to Baltimore City, but it's certainly a challenge we have where elected officials do take large contributions from developers or developers and their spouses or developers, their spouse and their company, and then support projects that can have very widespread opposition from the neighborhood. Yeah, I don't want to be too negative in this regard. So I'll just say that is something that happens in the city. And I'll just point out there that I'm publicly financing my campaign, so I'll never take more than $150 from anyone. There will never be a, oh, let's go look at Zach's. Are these people donating to him? They're not donating more than $150. So you can entrust that if I say something's good for the neighborhood, it's because I really believe that. But also, there's a balance because we have these gorgeous, wonderful, historic row home neighborhoods that everyone across the city wants. That's why in lower income neighborhoods, there's such a focus on solving the vacancy crisis, not just because abandoned homes are terrible, but because people want good row home neighborhoods. You know, so I'm excited to see the one getting built south of the interstate, right next to Nick's Fish House, the Lock Landing, I believe. There is a, hey, we should be making downtown more like the neighborhoods and not making the neighborhoods more like downtown. That is an important balance as we think through development. More housing is good. It's good for affordability. It's also good for financial sustainability of the city, but that doesn't mean we need giant skyscrapers everywhere.
And speaking of giant skyscrapers, one potential and likely big change we're going to see in Baltimore is the redevelopment of the Inner Harbor. It seems to be moving its way through the city council and approvals. But I know when I talk to the people around town, it seems like it's more controversial on the ground level than it's been at the city level. And then certainly there's some political candidates that have made their entire candidacy about opposing right. What is proposed at the Inner Harbor. So do you have any strong feelings on what is planned for the Inner Harbor by MCB Real Estate? Any thoughts there?
Thanks for bringing this up, Kevin. So I do public space in my day job. I'm a vice president of economic development for a management authority that I get to be involved a lot in public space. So I work a lot with planners and those types of groups. I'm raising a family effectively 5 blocks from this redevelopment. I will never take more than $150 from anyone. And it's also important to note that obviously, because my opponent is supporting it, there's a political incentive for me to come out and say, hey, Eric's selling out our Inner Harbor just like he sold our neighborhoods. The problem with that is I think that for the most part, this is a good plan that's going to be great for my family, my neighborhood, downtown, and the harbor as a whole. Very excited about the getting rid of the Light Street Spur, connecting McKeldin to the harbor, the way that the new design connects this space to the water, right? A lot more. What that's going to do to activate Pratt Street in that area of the central business district in downtown is, I think, really important. There are some very important questions that need to be answered. I think there's $330 million left of funding that needs to get figured out. And I wish that the council had required MCB to get that more ironed out before they voted on it. There's a traffic study that will be coming out pretty soon. It's important data to have. There's several things that still need to be ironed out. But if we're talking specifically about the plan, I think it's going to be really beneficial for us.
Gotcha. And people ask me my opinion on it all the time, and I'm not really an opinion journalist or person, but I think everyone can agree it would be a lot different down there if it happens. And hopefully through the public process, we'll see how it plays out. And then obviously there's a lot of financing that has to go in place. And a lot of times, as we've seen with the Baltimore Peninsula project, the initial master plan rendering isn't always what comes to be. And a lot of times organically, economic market conditions will determine what happens in certain plots of land. So that there's no doubt big changes are coming to the Inner Harbor, and anybody of any age is used to the Inner Harbor being a certain way. So whether somebody's for a project or not, it'll certainly be different, which would be...
One thing I have noticed is that there's, and it's tough because a lot of people who support me and support my campaign and a lot of people who have babysat my toddler are in the camp of folks who feel really strongly against the project. And that's tough. But it is a situation because I've personally knocked, I think, I don't even know how many doors, but it's somewhere in the 4 digits. And my campaign has knocked a lot more than that. And the situation we're in is that I'm pretty confident there's a general, like the majority of people are for it, but they don't feel that strongly for it. People who are more against it are really strongly against it. And that may change over the next couple of months because there is the ballot measure at the beginning of November to decide about the charter, whether the charter amendment will pass. But right now I have noticed that it seems pretty cut out that way.
Gotcha. Certainly the people who are not for something are usually a lot louder than the people that are for something. And a lot of times I'll write an article about a business or development or something, and somebody will tell me like, oh, I can't believe some of those people in the comments section. I'll say, look, just got 150 likes on Facebook and 5 people were upset in the comments. That's a pretty good ratio. I wouldn't worry too much about those 5 people in the comments, not to say they didn't have legitimate concerns, but I think in life we look for what the consensus is on things, and it'll certainly be an interesting thing to play out involving public opinion and financing.
Kevin, you wait, the amount of times where, you know, in the course of a campaign, because you're so exposed to the public, where you have to remind yourself, or maybe in my case, you have to remind your spouse that for every person who's negative, there's usually 9 people who are positive. And it's natural for our brains to focus on that.
So Zach, you've been campaigning for a bit now. How's the campaign going? What's the feel on the streets?
Yeah, thanks a ton, Kevin. So one big thing that just happened 2 hours ago, we are now officially the first campaign in the history of Baltimore City to max out public financing, which means that we have raised enough small donations from city residents. So we've gotten $125,000 in the match from the city, which puts us at about $155,000. This is the first election cycle we've had this public financing opportunity. I cannot state enough how much this is going to change how politics works in Baltimore. 4 years from now, when everyone knows how public financing works, and this is a lot more common, it's going to have a really good impact on the democratic process. But so we're pumped about that. So we're at $155,000, which is, we feel like that's where we need to be to get our message out. So that's running on a bit of a high from that. Our volunteer game has been great. Most weekends we have about 15 volunteers out door knocking for at least a shift, and got a lot of momentum building from that. We have a lot of meet and greets. We've had a couple of neighborhood associations that have allowed me to come on, give my stump speech, and then answer questions. And it's just been extremely, extremely positive. And I had no idea how this was going to go. And the toughest thing about it, I'll be honest with you, is just doing it as a parent of a toddler. My wife is a med student, but she coaches dance at Loyola University. And she's gone nights for practice a lot. And then I've got a lot of my campaign events in the evening. And it's, man, that's like the most stressful part, to be honest with you, but really believe in it. And it's been great. And so I'm really thankful I've made this decision.
Well, thanks a lot for coming on and telling us your story and telling us your thoughts on some issues that are important to South Baltimoreans, and tell us about Election Day and the different ways people can vote this year.
Boy, will I. So the Election Day, to clarify, is the Democratic primary. So the Democratic primary is on May 14th. There's only 2 candidates running, and in every race that anyone can vote for, a Democrat will win, right, in Baltimore City. So the way it works in Maryland, you have to be a registered Democrat to vote in the Democratic primary. So if you want your vote to count in Baltimore, it's not a good system, but it's a system we have. You need to be a registered Democrat. The process is really easy. Just straight Google register to vote Maryland. It literally takes 2 or 3 minutes. So do that. The Election Day is on the 14th, but there's early voting the 2nd through the 9th of May. So you can show up right at your polling locations and vote for that 7-day period. You can also request a mail-in ballot. So the ballot just comes to your house. So one thing that the state of Maryland does really well is have a lot of different options for people to vote. I really just encourage people to make your voice heard, participate in the democratic process. We only have 20% of the population of the 11th district, which is about 50,000 people-ish, that we expect are going to vote in the primary. It is really part of the civic duty to be involved in that way. So I encourage people to vote. A lot of ways to do it. We've got some info on our website of how to do it, but you can just Google register to vote Maryland. It's straightforward.
What I think is a good thing is whatever your thoughts are on national politics, those races are pretty much settled, which The city made the decision several election cycles back to align their elections with the national elections, right, which I thought was unfortunate in a way, because I like to see that focus on local. There's a lot of people out there to vote for their favorite presidential candidate. I feel like some people are just going to check a box when it comes to these local things. So I do like that now that a lot of those national positions are settled, people can really go out and vote because they're passionate about who should be the next mayor. And so in that aspect, I do like that the focus will probably be on local right now. And you can come to southbeaver.com to see the results of those elections. And unfortunately, election results don't trickle in as fast as they used to. So maybe Zach and Eric will be on pins and needles for a while after the election, but it'll certainly be an interesting time. We could have a new mayor, who knows? We could have different council president, different council people. So it'll certainly be a thing to watch in Baltimore. So Zach, thanks a lot for coming. coming on, and we will see you around the neighborhood.
Absolutely. Thanks a ton, guys.